The MacDill Executive Board. I was going to say what you haven't heard today, which is I'll be brief, but I'm noticing that little pie thing is going to do that for me.
Yes, sir.
Although it wasn't working on the last couple of speakers, I noticed.
Oh,
just
okay.
Here's the bottom line. We are talking about a bill that is based on New Hampshire, and I come from a unique perspective, which is that my office is on the border of Maine and New Hampshire. About 30% of my practice is criminal defense in New Hampshire, about 60% Maine in various things, and about 10% in Massachusetts. New Hampshire has an executive director now named Randy Hawks, fellow Mainer. He's the executive director of the Public Defender project that they have down there. He spoke at a symposium that I'm not sure if any of you attended, and guess what? He was against this bill, and he explained the problems with it. And his issues, and he told me many things which I'm not going to address today because it's outside the concept of what I'm going to speak on, but he talked about why this bill wouldn't work in Maine. And one of the issues that I can speak about is the difference between Maine and New Hampshire. And with respect to my brother behind me, not my real brother, with respect to him, the reality is that Maine has a totally different system than New Hampshire does. First of all, New Hampshire has a system where you have misdemeanors and felonies, like Maine, but if you're a misdemeanor, you start in district court, you have a bench trial before you go and have a jury trial. That's unique. That's unique to New Hampshire. How that impacts cost, I don't know. But do we know the answer to that? Can we say there's an answer to that? So when we're talking about savings, is there a savings? We don't know. New Hampshire also has a unique system when it comes to DWIs. There is no threat of jail, and as has been said today, guess what that means? No threat of jail means they're not in the system. Means it's not costing taxpayers money. Means you don't need to provide money for defense for people who are accused of DWI. It's a Class B misdemeanor. That's not true in Maine. My understanding from Attorney Pelletier is that OUIs in Maine are in top five in terms of charges that Maine citizens would face. The cost, when I estimated, and he told me the number was about $540 per voucher, would be about $300,000 to $400,000 per year we're spending on OUIs. New Hampshire doesn't spend that. The other thing that New Hampshire doesn't do is their fine system. In Maine, I'll be honest, we have a zero-sum system. We chase fines. We spend more money to chase fines than we do in collecting. How does that work? It's crazy. If you think about it, we have people who get time to pay, which is necessary, in Maine. They have time to pay their fine. They don't pay their fine, there's a warrant that's issued. They're arrested, they go to jail. They come from jail to the courthouse, and guess what happens? They get credit for the fine that they had imposed by the judicial system. Does that seem crazy? Well, New Hampshire doesn't have that. 92% of fines in New Hampshire are collected on the day the person pleads. Now, I will tell you something that's going to change regarding that. New Hampshire is moving away. But when we're moving away from that practice, but when we talk about New Hampshire and we talk about Maine, that's a huge difference. We're chasing money to get money. They don't have to
deal with that. Would you wrap up your testimony, sir?
I'm sorry?
Would you wrap up your testimony?
Sure. I wrapped it up.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is James Hughes. I practice law in South Portland, Maine. And I did send presented a letter of testimony. I'm going to be very brief because of the fine job that the lawyers before me have done. They've done a great, they've pretty much covered it all. What else is there to say? I'll just say this, that I'm in the courts probably 3 or 4 days a week. And the hard work that the indigent criminal defense lawyers do is incredible. They're so committed, so dedicated. Now, I don't doubt the sincerity of the governor's proposal, but as Oliver Wendell Holmes said, a page of experience is worth more than volumes of reason. And we've had about 30 or so criminal defense lawyer, and that collective experience is such that this is a very bad, bad decision. So I'm going to rest it on that, Your Honor. Rest it on that.
I'll take that.
Chairman. Chairman Burns.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anyone else would like to speak in opposition? Good evening, sir.
Sandra Burns, members of the committee. My name's Harold Hankey. I live in Whitefield, Maine, and I agree with most of what was said, or all of what was said, in opposition to this bill. I don't think it's a good idea. What I'm concerned about, one of the things I'm concerned about, is that the New Hampshire example was given, but I mean, I was at the symposium, and I did speak to Randy, and you know, they pay pensions, they pay for copies, they pay for postage, they pay for health insurance. This system we have right now doesn't pay for any of that. So if you're going to have a contract system, I don't think the contractors are going to donate, you know, pension, copies, postage, and health insurance. They're going to want to fit that into their budget. And that means the actual money that they give to the attorneys is either going to be less, so they'll have less experience, or possibly they'll just be so overworked they'll be incompetent. Either result is not desirable. The other thing I wanted to say is that I've been an attorney since 86, and I have been doing court-appointed work since about early 90s somewhere, I don't remember. But there's been a lot of talk about criminal defense work, and it's very complicated, and you need experience. But I wanted to just draw your attention to child protection cases, which I do a lot of. And in the child protection case arena, you have to deal with people who are in a very stressful situation. You have to deal with, sometimes because of overworked caseworkers, poor judgment. You have to know people. And the only way to know people and kind of see through their freak out on that day is to have experience. And experience is so important in child protection work. Plus, you have to have the experience and know-how to be able to cross-examine experts. Child protection cases are riddled with experts. There's piles and piles of discovery, psychological evaluations, forensic psychologists, reports from Spurwink. And when you're cross-examining, Dr. Ritchie or, you know, one of the psychologists, it's not that easy unless you know what you're doing. And I don't think you can just expect an attorney at a law school who you hire and you dump a bunch of child protection cases on them, that they're going to do the kind of job that the current attorneys do. So that's why I think the bill's a very risky proposition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hankey. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, sir. Yes. Evening.
Senator Burns and Representative Hobbins and members of the committee, my name is Newell Auger. I'm a resident of Yarmouth. I normally appear before other committees of this state as a registered lobbyist for any number of for-profit and not-for-profit organizations. But I also have been a solo practitioner for the last 10 years, doing administrative law, family law, and also a significant amount of child protective work. And I want to tell you a very brief story about this, because I think if you've listened to the testimony about the people who've come before you who clearly have something in their heart for this work, whether it's Mr. Hornblower or Amy Fairfield from earlier this afternoon, my first job coming back to Maine was as the legislative and public affairs director for DHS, which is Nick Adelson's job and John Martin's job. And about 3 months after I started working, there was a little girl who was taken into DHS custody, probably shouldn't have been, and was given to a foster parent she probably shouldn't have been given to. And literally 15 years ago to the month, the little girl was found wrapped up in duct tape in this woman's basement. And that then preceded one of the most significant examinations of our child protective system. And I appeared before this committee several times and had Representative Sherman asking me some very difficult questions about what we were doing with that system and why. So when I opened up my practice, And in the course of that time, I got lots of questions from representatives like you. Why is this case going on? Why is this aunt not being able to get her niece placed with her? What is going on? And when I opened up my practice, I thought, you know what? I'm going to take a couple of these cases on and find out just exactly how these cases work. And it's 10 years later, and I'm still doing them. And I hope you get that conveyed to you, that these people who are coming before you aren't, you know, it's not about $60 an hour. You're not getting the bottom of the barrel, all right? People don't go into this work because, you know, they're chasing the dollar. They come into it from a level of commitment. And it's through some life experience that they've had, like the one I had. Are there ways we can improve the system? Absolutely. And William Thompson is a great representative for that. And clearly there are ways we can improve it, even beyond all the great success that MCLS has done. When I first started out, I literally got no training at all. I was actually quite lucky because I'd appeared before these committees. I was familiar with the DHS issues. I effectively represented the department in any number of different television interviews. So I was somewhat conversant. But I'd never done a trial. I had no clue. And I was darn lucky that the first trial I ever did was with Hank Hankey. And that's really was been my training. And from that has set me on a course to continue to do what I'm doing today. But yeah, there are absolutely lots of different ways we can improve it. As a taxpayer, I want to make sure that when lawyers are submitting those bills, that they're not overzealously representing their client. They're just zealously representing their client. And I want to make sure that that bill is accurately reflecting what's in there. But I don't know if we necessarily need to impose a completely new construct or an administrative system on top of what we've got. Because I think it's working pretty well. It certainly can be improved, but I think it's working pretty well. I'm not going to belabor your day any longer than it's already been, but I'll see you in the halls, and if you have any questions, you can pull me aside. I'll try to answer them.
Well, we'll start here. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Senator Johnson. So if I understand your message right, it's saying don't wrap up MCILS inductee.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions?
And, Sue, I've got my testimony here for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Auger.
Yeah, thank you for... I broke the time-honored rule that no lobbyist should ever open his mouth unless he's getting paid to say something. So I hope you'll indulge me for that.
I hope you've started a trend. Good. Thank you. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having this public hearing and allowing all of us to speak today. We all care about the energy of the state a great deal. My name is Attorney Scott Hood. I've been practicing for 10 years now. I practice in Biddeford, Maine. The problems that my indigent clients typically deal with are incredibly overwhelming. They not only deal with issues of poverty, but they also deal with issues of substance abuse and mental health. It's not uncommon for a typical client of mine to have dealt with serious abuse and neglect as a child and to still deal with the trauma of that years later. It's not uncommon for a typical client of mine to be a perpetrator of domestic violence as well as a victim of it many a times. With my clients, couch surfing and homelessness is the norm. It's not the exception. In my 10 years of practicing law, I've witnessed my clients slowly suffering more and more with each passing day. This is for a variety of reasons. The services that they need for their mental health and substance abuse problems either are not being funded or being eliminated altogether. The poverty problems in the last 10 years, they're not getting better. They're getting worse. Affordable housing is not becoming easier to find. It's becoming harder to find. Getting housing vouchers isn't easier to do. It's getting harder to do. Our shelters are full. It takes quite a bit of time for people to even get into the shelters. Many of my clients have lost their main care and do not have access to the medications they need to live their daily life. And as a result, they're buying their medications off the streets. I have more clients that have gone into drug dealing and prostitution to fund their drug addictions in order to deal with the morass of their lives. I, I've witnessed the jails become the catch-all for my clients. And, you know, ironically, it's the one place where they can get a roof over their head, three warm meals, a bed, and the medications that they need to lead a barely sustainable life. You know, given all this, I find this bill very, very troubling. And I find it troubling because there's no analysis that the proposed contract system would save money without compromising justice for my indigent clients. There's virtually no blueprint as to how this bill would work. I also think very importantly is that there's no analysis proving that the quality or manner in which indigent legal services is currently being delivered is flawed or broken. I know this was mentioned earlier, but in essence, we have a solution searching for a problem. We're trying to break something that's not broken. You know, I'm proud to say that I'm one of the folks, just like a lot of people in this room, that are on the front lines dealing with the indigent. I can promise you that this legislation will not help the indigent of our state. It will only hurt them more if passed as is. And I'd ask of you to please don't make their lives any more difficult than what it already is by compromising one of the systems out there that serves them so very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Johnson, sir?
Yes.
Still got time. Senator Johnson has a question.
Thank you. Actually, it's not a question, but I'm moved to say thank you for sharing with us some of the realities of the vulnerable side of our society that you deal with frequently. And it's a very depressing prospect to hear just how much that's getting worse right now. But thank you for sharing the reality.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Anyone else?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening. Senator Burns, and I see Mr. Hobbins is not here, members of the committee, my name is Joe McConis. I've practiced criminal defense under this court-appointed system for 16 years, and I'm a solo practitioner, and that's been true since 2004, so coming up on 12 years of solo practice in court-appointed defense cases. Many of the other people that testified here have covered the numbers. Representative Dion explained why business models don't always translate, perhaps, into our day-to-day reality in dealing with people in jail and defending them in court. I do want to talk about numbers, but the first thing I want to discuss is the passion you've heard, not just from people like me who practice the law, but the few folks that came in who had been accused and the passion they had, or reporting the passion of their defense attorneys, the former judge. I was in this room, so I didn't see him, but I could hear him, and how he explained that the passion decreased when the allotment was given to that group of five, I believe, five lawyers in Ohio. That's what's unquantifiable here. And I repeat the importance of the passion because that's where the first number I want to address comes up. The governor's proposal always bandies about the fact that there's 500 lawyers on the court-appointed roster overseen by the Maine Commission on Indigent Legal Services. That number, if it's 500, is because they want to defend people. They're not drafted. They're not looking for, they're looking for the work, but they're not drafted into this. They want to help people, and again, that's a reflection of the passion. Now, I know how late it is, ladies and gentlemen, but I am going to throw some numbers at you, and I'm going to make it as entertaining and simple as I can. But let's use that number of 500 rostered attorneys. They're not all full-time. I am, but all 500 are not. They have diverse practices, or they only take a portion of criminal defense that they want to. And then let's use the MCIS budget. At $18 million, I always use Mr. Pelletier's name because he's the face and he pays me, but if Mr. Pelletier has $18 million and we made all of those, just in the hypothetical, full-time, that becomes 36,000 an attorney throughout Maine. And I mention that equation because starting prosecutors start at roughly 44,000. 36,000 is not extravagant. I'm not saying 44,000 is extravagant, but I think you need to make some comparisons there. My next piece is I heard Mr. Thompson, I met Mr. Thompson last week, discuss about, well, we have 500 lawyers, but we want blocks of contracts, which was his testimony today. Well, I've run my York County numbers because I've lived there so long. Last year, the commission paid vouchers out of $1.8 million. And for the first 6 months of this fiscal year, it's 1.61, so doubling that, 2.3 million for fiscal year 15-16. So I'm going to make Mr. Thompson the chief public defender for a moment. If I bid, and I round up a handful of lawyers, which I'm going to mention, if I bid $4 million, $4.1 million, because I have the projections that are state data, Mr. Pelletier provided me with the data, if I bid for $4.1 million, I believe this chief public defender is going to reject that because that where's the cost containment there? Where's the cost savings there? I'm bidding for what I think it's worth today, and the numbers prove that. So let's say, and that's for a two-year period that we were talking about biennial matters. So let's cut that into 2 years or a year each, $2 million, pardon me for stammering. I need to hire, counting myself, at least 10 lawyers because the prosecutor's office in York County is 16 prosecutors. Cumberland County are 16 or 17. They're in between. So I need to match caseload beyond our numbers about weighted caseload and all that. I need a substantial amount of people that I have to hire. And then we get into, I don't recall which member asked the question, why is this, Mr. Pelletier said it diminishes quality and how does this work pan out? If I make the bid, and you heard from Amy Fairfield, who practices in York County, if I don't hire her or any of her 11 lawyers, she's not practicing criminal defense. So whatever expertise she may have, or in the reverse, she makes a bid that excludes me, you've lost 16 years of my experience, and I will take other measures. But I did want to throw those numbers out to you, and that is that competitive disadvantage or diminishment about who's boxed out, is my phrase, if there's a bid system and only so many lawyers will be under the contract.
I think we do appreciate those cost comparisons.
Thank
Any
you.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Anyone else wishes to speak in opposition?
All right. My name's Connolly, Tom Connolly, and you've been very patient with us here. I noticed there's not anybody that's in favor of the thing that I can hit. Okay. I mean, I'd question them. Can I vote there? No. So what they're saying is they're going to take 500 of us that have been 34 years defending the poor, having heroin addicts vomit on us.
Sir, lower your voice.
I'm sorry, I have a cold, sir, and I do need to
lower your voice, please.
Yes, sir, of course, of course. Pardon me.
You may continue.
They're going to take 500 lawyers, and he says he's going to remove them to 5 to 7 firms. That's what he said. No firm takes an oath to defend the Constitution. No firm takes an oath, as we are required as attorneys, to have utmost felicity to our clients as well as the court. Every firm, every PA, every corporation, every association takes an oath to the shareholder, to the profit. That's not government of the people, by the people, for the people. It's not. That's government for business, by business, about business. 34 years, unbroken, I've been doing court appointments. And the genius of our system is at stake. And the genius is individualization. The fact that a judge can say, I think you, Connolly, can handle that person that's suffering from mental illness that put that baby in the oven. That was me. All right? And they take the judge's experience, their logic, their intuition, their discretion, and they try and find justice. It's illusory. It's hard. I've seen it only a few times. But it's a process we all believe in. And that individualization is gone. The other individualization is gone is the historical experience of an attorney who has represented clients over time. In my experience, my practice primarily is important. And I've represented now the father, the son, and the grandson. over time, and prosecutors prosecuted the father, son, and grandson. And having historic experience, institutional memory, contacts is profound and important to a system of worded liberty. You take the oath that we take, and that oath means something. It's the same basic oath that you take as legislators. And our oath, which is the oldest oath in the United States for attorneys, came from this very committee. So we came from a situation where we were a hybrid. We worked for the court. That was taken away and put under MCLIS, a quasi-independent organization, and they are independent. And they do very good, and they're decent people. And they're working in very difficult times with budget cuts. You should know that, except for this Christmas, the two Christmases before, all of us didn't get paid from November until the first of the year, just at Christmas time. And yet we still banged it. We still got those probations done. You think the court closes at 4? It doesn't. We're there all the time. We're there early in the morning. We're late at night. We're in the jails. You're not going to get that if your incentive is to the bottom dollar figure. If we're getting $60 an hour in order to do anything, they're going to have to bid less than that. It's a race to the bottom. And the business of government is justice. And nobody has presented you a case that we do injustice. I haven't. I didn't mean to be loud. I could go on for a while and take my shoe off and bang the podium, but I think this bill should be dead. And I can tell you that nobody here will rest until it is. And we won't forget. And we are around. And we do a good job. And you should be proud of us rather than kicking us all the time. Just as we're proud of you for listening to this. Thank you.
Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Conley.
Thank you.
Senator Burns, members of the committee, my name is Charlie Sultan. I'm here on behalf of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Let me just sort of tie this up very quickly. Where do you want to go from here? We think this vehicle is not it, but let us commit to this. I've talked to the judiciary. I've talked to the governor's office. I've talked to the prosecutors, the bar, the defense bar. All of us are committed in always looking at, and the commission, to improving the system. What I would suggest is that we be allowed to continue those discussions of how to help the court make the system more efficient with suggestions. We've had that discussion with the chief. I'd like to continue that discussion with the two chief trial justices. Of making sure that when there's a DACA call that perhaps they get those lawyers who are on the MCLS time clock in and out of there so that there's not increased time and expense for waiting while others are going first, that it's bogging down the system. There's a big problem in making sure that we have sufficient lawyers in what we call the RIM counties, Aroostook, Washington, out west. That's a problem not just for the defense bar, it's for the civil bar, it's for the hospitals, it's for everybody. But there are ways that perhaps we can tweak how expenses are paid in getting to those counties to be in court, to do a DACA call, a lawyer of the day, things that I think we can do that will enhance the availability. You really can't put a contract up there if there's still only a handful of lawyers in that county. It's just not practical. And so you still need people to come into those counties and work. So let us do that. Whether or not we need to do immediate action to give a little more horsepower and staff to the commission, that would be awesome. And so on. You'd have to change the title of this and strike half of it and so on. But that's fine if we can find the funds. We know that you have been generous in this body, and the governor's been generous in providing additional funds, not only to the lawyers doing this, but to the commission to do the work. So I think you have an elevated dialogue. You have committed people, as you've heard here all day, from all persuasions and all people involved in the system, to continue that discussion to make the thing work. And a lot of that can be done outside of a legislative solution. So that is what we're all committed to, and we make that promise to you. So it's not necessarily this bill, but other avenues that we can make this happen. So. things.
Thank you. Questions, Mr. Sultan? Seeing none. Thanks.
Appreciate your time today, too. Thank
you. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill, either against or for, or neither for nor against? Seeing none. As I said, the work session is tentatively scheduled for the 4th at 1 p.m. Where this is a public hearing, I'll refrain from saying that there is nobody around this horseshoe that wants to punish anybody or kick anybody. I'll save that for the work session. I will also say at the work session, everybody around this horseshoe wants the very best system that we can possibly have in the state of Maine. I appreciate your patience today. I appreciate the feedback that we've gotten from all sides. I appreciate especially the constructive criticism. I think this committee will take that all into consideration, and we are willing to work with the bar or anybody else to make sure we have the best system in the country. Is there anything else that the committee would like to have that's on your mind right now? And just keep in mind that if we can't think of it now, we have plenty of time between now and the hearing to ask for. Yes, Representative Ginsburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a visual learner, if you will, and there have been a lot of facts and figures that have been tossed. I tried to take some notes. I would love it if people are coming to the work session and with supplemental material, that we have some sort of charts and not necessarily graphs, but charts that kind of compare and contrast what we're looking at, and that would be really helpful to me. And I believe we have some of that in pieces and parts, but that would be really helpful for me.
I appreciate that, and I think those listening may be able to help with some of that. Anything that you can give us to help us come to the right conclusion is going to be valuable to us. The more information we can have for a basis of comparison, because as I said, we all want the best out of this, so there's no preconceived notions here. Is there anything else that the committee has on their mind? Seeing none, this hearing is adjourned. Thank you. And I think are we done for the day, guys? Anything else? All right. Thank you.